Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome to the end of summer. In other words, edition 189 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula One podcast, recorded right here in the beautiful Norfolk, UK, and brought to you by our proud partners Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up to the game by visiting nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1, as I'm sure you've done over the summer and you've had lots of fun with it, I bet. My name is sports journalist Michael Bailey. Hello. And yes, F1 is back after its summer break, meaning in this podcast, we are going to discuss all the latest F1 news that you may have missed during your own personal shutdown, as well as some bits and pieces in tweets and social. Coming up, Max makes demands. Ped is on the money. Is this the turning point for Renault? All that and more. As you know by now, this is the first of our bite-sized podcasts this week, as we bring you 3 pods in 3 days. Once you've digested this, we'll be back with our Belgian Grand Prix preview and our Spa predictions podcasts. There will be some mid-season predictions too in that lot, so get your thinking caps on. Joining me for the pod for tonight and this week are current Prediction League champion Steve Rust, aspiring F1 correspondent Callum Springle, and aspiring F1 engineer Dan Springle. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me. How are you, Steve? How's your summer?
Not too bad. I don't recall much of it, but...
You were drunk?
I was for some of it, actually, because I had a friend stag do. I just remembered that. Yeah, I had a friend stag do in Estonia. No Formula One race there yet.
Not yet. Sounds lovely, though.
Yeah, no, it was really good. Yeah, it was really good, yeah.
Awesome. We'll have to go out to Estonia and enjoy ourselves. Callum, how are you?
Yeah, all right.
You're looking very dapper in your shirt tonight. Very dapper. Is that a special effort?
Not particularly. You just sort of cobble bits together out of my wardrobe, so...
You mean floor drive?
That's a good start. Well done. Now, didn't you get told off by your parents last time for bickering too much, or was your dad just joking on Twitter about that?
I don't know.
I didn't part of it.
I didn't even see it, to be fair.
Well, put it like this. If I looked like that, having just cobbled together some stuff, I'd be very happy. So well done, Callum. Good work. Dan, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
How busy have you been over the summer?
We had FA Cup round at Snet over, was it last weekend, I think. So, yeah, we won every race.
Of course you did. You've got an NRF1 sticker on the side of the car.
And personal home race as well. So that was good. Good to sleep in my own bed. But, yeah, Jacopo is now the fourth man in FA Cup history to have done what's called the treble. So win every single race. Yeah, we got pole as well.
He won, won every single race at the round?
Yeah. Yeah, we got pole as well, and then fastest lap in race 1 and 2. Only thing is, a teammate nicked 1 point off us by having fastest lap in race 3, so we nearly did a clean sweep.
How much of this is down to the fact there is an NRF1 sticker on the side of the car? 100%. Or both sides?
Obviously 100%.
That's enough for me. See, we're flying, and we're going to be racing ourselves soon. More on that to come in a bit. But it's time for news. This is the news podcast, so this is where we wrap up the F1 news. Obviously, the F1 news this time is not over a week or a few days or a fortnight. It's a month, so there's a lot. So there's probably a lot I haven't caught, have missed out entirely, because to be honest, I've had a break from Formula 1. I don't think that's bad. But in terms of the things that caught my eyes as we head into the second half of the season, first up, Max Verstappen. He says Red Bull need to improve if they want to keep him. And in fairness to Christian Horner, he reckons Red Bull will be taking points off Ferrari come the second half of the season. Is Max in a position to start making these demands, Callum?
Yeah, because, you know, he's now one of the fastest drivers on the grid. I think we can't really contend with that. I mean, he's consistently, particularly in the early half of the season, he was consistently ahead of Ricciardo on one lap pace at least. So I think the one thing that Ricciardo does have on him is that he finds it easier to sort of pull the race together and to almost put the car in positions that it shouldn't really be in.
Yeah, I think he's maturing really nicely, actually. If you compare his performances driving-wise this year, I mean, he's not really had the car underneath him reliability-wise, but if you compare him to a couple of years ago, he's definitely matured quite a lot.
It's curious timing to a degree, Steve, I suppose, because when we left the first half of the season, Max had careered into his teammate and all wasn't particularly well.
Yeah, I think it's a little too early to make comments like that, considering I know he's had a lot of races where he either hasn't finished or hasn't finished in the points for whatever reasons. It wasn't always his fault. But I think just given that, I just don't think you can kind of really be making those miles too soon, really. I think he could almost be at risk of being sort of accused of being a bit arrogant, really.
It's interesting as well with Daniel Ricciardo, because I imagine he sits there thinking, well, hang on. I'm ahead of you in the line. I've got less time, theoretically. I need to get out of here and move to a quicker team if it's not really working.
He does, really, but depends if anyone will have him.
Oof.
Not in that sense, but, like, can anyone afford to buy him out of his contract, or will he fit into a team somewhere in terms of the team dynamic? I mean, Ferrari have got something quite nice going on there, if you're Sebastian Vettel. I don't know. After this year, Mercedes may settle with Bottas and Hamilton, and where else is he going to go, really?
Yeah, it's a curious one. I guess a lot of it comes down to if Christian Horner is saying that Red Bull are going to take off points off Ferrari. I think we'll get into this more as well, but I think Renault are hoping for a few upgrades, which will involve their engine too, Callum, over the second half of the season starting in Belgium. So that's the crux, isn't it? I mean, we all hope Red Bull improve anyway, because we need that third team involved in this.
Yeah, I think I'll stick my neck on the line and suggest that, if anything, Red Bull is the place to be at the minute, because they got a base car that was quite, not necessarily simple, but kind of easy to work with and easy to sort of develop. They knew what their strengths were and what their weaknesses were. And also, as time goes on, probably in the next sort of 18 months or so, I would have thought you'll get a little bit more engine parity. So if you apply sort of a long-term thinking to it, then surely Adrian Newey is now totally on board with sort of the regulations now being opened up a bit more to a creativity that sort of plays into what he wants from Formula One as a designer, and also planning long term with Renault, surely, or just with any of the manufacturers other than Mercedes, they're all going to be closing up. So over time, hopefully, it won't really be an engine formula, but it'll be an aero formula again, which would play into the hands of Red Bull with Adrian Newey.
What do you reckon, Steve? Where would you want to be?
Most people would still say Mercedes or Ferrari, wouldn't they? But, you know, I mean, Renault have been in it before, haven't they? They've won championships, albeit a long time ago. But I think you would want to be with any manufacturing team. I think it's still going to be somewhat an engine formula, even though I wouldn't entirely agree with what Callum says. I still think there's quite a lot of aerodynamics down to it. But yeah, I think they're best just stick with it, really. You know, Red Bull haven't got any other direction to go with engine suppliers. They tried that. But I think they'll be back. Renault will be back. You know, they're pumping loads and loads more money into it. They'll be back.
I wonder how much of that we'll see in the second half of the season too, because we did see signs of it in the first half. Talked a lot about Red Bull. Should we talk about Red Bull in Italian? Just checking, it is definitely in Italian. Toro Rosso. I can't roll my R's or say S's properly. When I learned Spanish, it was a major flaw. They, conversely, are expecting quite a few problems in Spa and Monza, I guess because the car's shit. I mean, ultimately, let's knock this down. They unveiled their car at the start of the year and everyone was declaring the livery the best out of the grid. That's literally been the high point of the season so far for them, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah, you could argue that. I mean, it was a bit of a shock. Personally, I was a little bit disappointed that they changed the livery because I quite like the old one. But it kind of grows on you, the royal blue and red. But in terms of performance, the drivers have been crashing into each other, and particularly, I think it was Silverstone. So I don't think the drivers have been on their best form this year. Plus, I don't know, at the start of the year, everyone was going on about how good the car would be because it looked somewhat like the Mercedes and had a few features like the Mercedes itself, and you kind of hoped for them to live up to the potential, really, but it's not happened.
We've talked about engine formula. Is it the engine that's doing for Toro Rosso?
Well, it's the same as the Red Bull, and I would say I'm actually quite disappointed with Toro Rosso, because when it came out, you just think Mercedes. It's just a Mercedes that they bought out of IKEA, essentially.
So, they sell those. Can we get one? Steve, can we get one? Yeah, Steve's nodding, yeah.
So yeah, I'd say it is largely down to the car, but also have been some pretty terrible performances on the driver's side. I think the last year or so, Kvyat's had more penalty points than he's had world championship points.
What a stat that is. I saw that. Phenomenal. I guess because with Toro Rosso, we've always looked at it going, oh, they've got such great young drivers that they're coming through. It's the breeding ground, isn't it, for drivers that then go on to the, you know, the main team, Steve. But this year, we've had Daniel Kvyat, who's looked pretty lost, really, literally in the car sometimes. And then Carlos Sainz, you know, has got a bit about him, but has that just been Daniel driving into him, or has there been his own issues too?
It could have been, but I think some of it must be his own issues because he hasn't always really qualified that well. I mean, sometimes he's actually been out-qualified, Kvyat, you know, or by him. But yeah, I mean, I think at one stage, I think Sainz was kind of rumoured to be linked with Ferrari in the future, but I mean, now you wouldn't place your bets on that, would you? Yeah, who knows? I mean, all drivers have that odd season, don't they?
It's true. In terms of where the team goes from here, I saw a bit saying that their talks with Honda have collapsed, which is, you know, a bit like what's just generally happening to the engine, I suppose. Is that good or bad news? I can't work out. I mean, we've had the discussions about whether teams would actually want to be involved with Honda anyway and where that stands. I mean, at the moment, Honda are back to square one, aren't they? They literally only have McLaren and that's it. And did Toro Rosso need to do something different? I mean, it would possibly have benefited Red Bull maybe if they'd have been able to have a look at a second option. But ultimately, it just taps into the thing where what are Toro Rosso trying to do here?
Yeah, I don't know either. To be honest, I think going with anyone other than whoever is supplying Red Bull is a little bit pointless. Because if your sole purpose is to promote young drivers through the same system that you're working within, then surely to have the continuity of the same feel and drivability of the engine they'll be using were they to be promoted, surely that is the only productive option.
Couldn't agree more. Now, Dan, do you like driverless cars?
No.
Have you watched any of Robo Race?
No. Okay.
What about a driverless safety car?
Personally, I can actually see it happening. I don't necessarily agree with it.
What issue would you have with it?
Well, say if it's raining, for example, cast your mind back to Brazil last year. I'm not sure robotics and electronics are quite advanced enough that they can deal with not necessarily the waterproofing, but being able to find puddles and reacting to potential like aquaplaning moments. Because the safety car, as heavy as it may be, even you'll find in your road car that as you go over a big puddle, you'll aquaplane, you'll be able to feel the steering go really light. So in that sense, you still need a human in it to be able to actually react properly. You could probably argue that human reaction time and human being what essentially it is, you can't always react as best as possible, and you could probably program that into an electronic machine. But yeah, I don't necessarily agree with the idea of it.
You read my mind. I was thinking about the fact that the rain might get into the electronics and it might all short circuit. And then what would Lewis Hamilton do? Can you speed up? What's the safety car doing? Oh no, speed it up. Now, Steve, as you rightly pointed out before we started recording, and Ped has already pointed out this afternoon to us all on WhatsApp, he had this discussion. He said this was coming. You know, driverless safety car, it's the future. I think he's probably quite excited about it himself because it's probably the safest way of doing it. And this is the FIA have said that they want this to happen in future.
Maybe they listen to our podcast.
Well, you have history of changing Formula One for the better, don't we, Steve? So what do you think? Would this be changing it for the better?
I would like to see it happen because I've said it before, but Formula One, hence the name, is the pinnacle of motorsport. And it's meant to be promoting, you know, the next thing technology to then be promoted and then passed down the formulas. And they could easily do it. I mean, you've got road cars now where they effectively drive themselves. They just scan the road. If the car in front speeds up, it slows down. They could do it. There's all sorts of things they could do with technology. They do that. They could sort that out for the wet. I mean, if they were that concerned, they could sort of say, well, okay, if the safety car's required and it is wet, we'll send out a driver in one. But if it's dry, we'll send out a driverless one. They could phase it in. There's ways that they could do it, but I'm sure they could.
God, that'd get confusing, wouldn't it? We'd have a virtual safety car, an actual safety car with a driver, and an actual safety car with a robot.
The virtual, the actual, and actual virtual.
I love it. I don't know if it's just me, but I really couldn't give a shit. I've got to be honest. It's like, as long as it's a safety car that's, you know, keeping everyone out of trouble for a period,
Should power it with ethanol.
Yes.
Now,
this is where Formula E is going. It should be Formula Ethanol, not Formula Electric.
Ethanol one.
Basically alcohol.
Basically alcohol. You've got a blog. Have you written a blog on this, which will be up on nrf1.uk as soon as I post it, Callum? I'm smiling. I'll do it very soon.
People to the power of ethanol, don't we?
Okay, come on. Just give us a...
Oh. How explosive would that be? Because obviously there's a problem with doing hydrogen cars.
I don't think it burns with a flame, so...
So what you're saying is they'd be highly flammable?
Yeah, but if you store it properly.
They wouldn't be highly flammable?
Well, it's like you have a rubber bladder fuel cell in a Formula One car. That doesn't explode anymore, does it? So if you store it properly, you'll be fine.
Do you want to give us a 15-second pitch on ethanol, Callum?
So ethanol is essentially pure alcohol, so obviously it's flammable, so therefore can work in a normal internal combustion engine.
Great for a night out.
In Russia.
In Russia. Explain Daniel's season. No, carry on, sorry.
And so here we get it from wheat. So why Theresa May's not passed it already, I don't know.
It's a little political joke there. We don't have any of those. Good for Norfolk.
Yeah, with our lots of wheat farms.
There is actually one in Wissington, which is in Norfolk.
Isn't that in Frozen? So that's a Frozen joke. Carry on.
For all you Disney fans out there.
I don't know what the crossover is between Formula One and Disney. Sorry, Callum, what are we on? 7 seconds? 7 seconds left.
So basically it's the, I suppose, long-term successor to petrol, because, you know, it works all the same, in largely the same way as petrol. Can work in the same engines as a petrol. And it could be cheaper than both petrol and diesel within the next, 5 years or so.
Wow.
Because I think in the EU, particularly diesel is quite heavily taxed. So, because like ethanol is not taxed in the EU, so if you lift that, then there's quite a significant sort of job or opportunity within Europe to kind of pioneer it.
I was going to say it's probably not going to be cheaper than gas in the States for a while, given they haven't got much tax on it. But that's really interesting. So yeah, it's ethanol as a fluid, and it can run the same engines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to optimize it, but it's still an internal combustion engine. It's just the only question is over efficiency, but still, if you ran like E100, so it's basically 98% ethanol and 2% something else renewable.
Sunflower oil.
Something like that.
That is a joke. I've got no idea.
I've no idea what it is either.
Sunflower oil wouldn't burn. Not for a component ICE.
What would you suggest that 2% should be, Dan?
I really don't know. I'm not a fuel expert.
If any fuel experts out there, Steve?
Methane.
Methane?
Methane?
Yeah.
Although that's,
we've got cows, so that's fine. That's still a fossil fuel. Well, cows can produce methane.
Fields in Norfolk, so those cows and things.
Brilliant. Well, I think at this point, read Callum's blog. It'll be up on the website very soon if it's not there when you log on to the website. But really interesting stuff. Good work, Callum. It's our man in the know. So how did we even get onto that? I forgot how we got onto that then, Callum. But your view on the safety car? Driverless?
Not really bothered.
That's exactly right. Well done. Correct answer. Norfolk's own, Norwich's own, Mike Gascoigne. I know him-ish well, sort of. Hope you're well, Mike. Back in Formula One, sort of. I think he's been doing sailing since leaving Caterham, or Caterham leaving the world. He's now been tasked with redeveloping the two-seater Formula One cars that they're going to have as experiences around every weekend. And when we were at the British Grand Prix back in July, you could see the two-seater rides going. I don't know how much it costs to get to experience one, but people can obviously do it. And it always struck me that if you were sat in the second seat, you couldn't really see what was going on, but they look quite cool. I'm just wondering how excited Mike Gascoigne really is about that. Would you be excited about doing this, Dan?
From an engineering point of view, it's a different challenge, isn't it? I mean, it's still an F1 car, but trying to make it safe for two people and making it so that it's representative of perhaps the current crop. I mean, personally, I think it's an early noughties car, isn't it? I think it's a Minardi or something. I think so.
I thought it was 90s, like late 90s.
Because it's run by Paul Stoddart, who used to own Minardi, didn't he?
Mm. It says here on Autosports, it was designed 20 years ago, as you said, by Paul Stoddart. So it's 20 years old. It's a car based on a 1998 Tyrrell 26.
Yeah, I don't know whether you want to have it so that it's representative of the current generation or the previous generation. So it's something that's reasonably recent. But personally, I quite like the fact that it's quite old and the engine was probably a V10, I should imagine, in that. So if you're in the crowd at one of the events, that's probably quite refreshing, hearing one of those big screaming things.
So you get to hear a proper engine at some point during watching a Grand Prix. Would you want to sit in one of these, Steve?
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, I'd love to go around tracking them, actually.
More so than drive yourself?
I don't think I could really drive a Formula One car. Does anyone remember the Richard Hammond's efforts? After watching that, I was sort of thinking, yeah, I think that's kind of my dream ruined. I think, yeah, I'll just be sitting at the back on one of these two-seater things and that'll be as close as I could realistically get.
I remember I got to do one of the Silverstone experiences. So I think that's a Formula Ford Cosworth little racer thing with basically a Fiesta engine in, but obviously it's got a bit more to it than that. It took me ages to try and get the thing moving, and that was one of those, so I can't imagine anything more technical than that.
Oh, I had one of those myself the other day at Bicester Heritage Airfield.
How was that?
Yeah, it was a bit different to what I was expecting. The throttle was basically like an on-off switch, and the brake pedal was pretty sensitive as well. But having come from driving an F3 car to an assembly area, it's a little bit different in terms of like the overall architecture of the car as well. I was sitting in it, and a space frame with just general bodywork around it, really. And you can see the pickup points for the suspension, basically like right next to your calf muscles. And I was thinking, I would not want to race one of these things, because if you have a smash, you're probably going to lose your legs.
Oh, lovely. So yeah, go and have a race around the Silverstone experience. You too
just
might lose your legs.
Space frame car. If you're going to do it in like a Dallara or a carbon tub car.
The one I drove in, I think, was probably much safer. They're very conscious of not killing people who are paying money to ride or losing their legs. So I think we'll be all right. Right, one other bit of news then. We talk about racing. Out of you two, who would be the best as a racing driver?
Oh, I don't know. We've been quite evenly matched on sim racing before, haven't we?
Yeah, it's not quite the same thing, though, is it? Because you need balls when you're actually in a car.
I think when we've been to Ella Park before, we've been pretty even. I don't know. I think it's.
I say, hang on. I'll just correct myself. You need guts, because you know it's not. That's very James sexist. Hunt. Yeah, yeah. I was quoting James Hunt. I look at the Facebook page, facebook.fb.me/thenrf1, and there's a great James Hunt question on there. Anyway, yeah. Sorry. Back to you two. Who?
I really don't know. Actually,
it's quite even. Go I on. Think. I could probably
we weigh the same as well, roughly, don't we? So yeah. In terms, there's not going to be any weight advantage.
But you're shorter than me.
True.
But no. Generally, I would say I'd be the driver and he'd be the engineer.
Yeah, that's generally what happens whenever we're on sim racing or something, don't we?
Well, we might well find out, because it'll be a competition within a competition, because we have got coming up the NRF1 Grand Prix. Yes, karting Grand Prix at Ella Park. It's Sunday, September the 3rd. Starts at 2 p.m. That's Ella Park in Suffolk, near Beccles. Yes, for those who are very astute, that is exactly the same time as the Italian Grand Prix. But don't worry about that. We'll probably watch it afterwards. It'll be great. And if you can come along and have a look. If you want to take part, you know, drop us an email. We might be able to sort that out. But yeah, we're going to all be... Well, most of us are going to be taking part. Steve, you're just going to be watching, aren't you? And you're going to film... stuff. We've got hopefully going to have loads of pictures, loads of different videos and all that sort of stuff. We're hoping it may well become an annual event, or a two-yearly event. There is a word for it being two-yearly. Biannual. Thank you. I should really know these words. But it's going to be really big. We're really excited about it. Sunday, September the 3rd. I'm wondering who... Steve, Kyle can't do it. And obviously he is two-time Beccles kart champion, so that's good news for the rest of us. Who would be your sort of outside bet for who's going to shine around... the twisting, turning Ella Park. Have you raced Ella Park before?
Yeah, many times.
Yeah, all right. You?
Yeah, we've been there a few times before, haven't we?
Okay, well, these two then are probably my dark horses.
Well, in the interest, if we say in the interest of fairness of the conversation, outside of these two then, is everyone on who's on our podcast involved then? So
Ped's going, Rich, Melissa is, DT can't make it, sadly. He spun a lot the last time I saw him go.
But I'd probably put Rich... He's always a bit of a dark horse with some things. You know, just outside of probably these two by the looks of it.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about these two now. I'll stick you at the back of the grid. So the smile on Callum's face is very unsettling. Okay, well, anyway, of course, if you can't make it, and I know a lot of people who live in America don't expect you to pop across to come to Ella Park to watch the karting Grand Prix, we'll have loads of coverage of it, obviously only secondarily to the Italian Grand Prix. And we'll, of course, let you know how everyone gets on and who comes out on top. So there we go. That's very exciting. As you can tell, we're very excited and we'll let you know how it all goes. Let's get some plugs in, shall we? To listen to our podcasts on your podcast player of choice and to subscribe, you know what to do. Visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe and you'll be able to find your link, be it iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Spreaker, Stitcher, whichever. And as we mentioned, Callum's blog and loads of other blogs are there on our website, which is in full working order. Just visit nrf1.uk and it's all there ready and waiting for you. Columns, prediction league latest, and everything else in between. nrf1.uk.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers. Okay, let's have some tweets and social. Just a reminder, if you want to send us your audio so you can actually hear your voice on the podcast, do it. It's dead easy. Just go to nrf1.uk. There's a red button. Click on that. Or you can record your audio on your phone or your device or your laptop, however, and email it to us, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. Now, the only thing I wanted to bring up was a message we got on our Facebook page, which is, the handle is @thenrf1, or if you visit fb.me/thenrf1, you'll be able to find all our gubbins. The message was from one of our faithful listeners, Maxwell Kerry. Maxwell, thank you so much for listening to us. We really appreciate it. He posted this during the break. Depending on what happens with Fernando Alonso, I think Renault could be better off bringing in Robert Kubica as the second driver during the second half of the season. As Julian Palmer has been in the car for the past year and a half, and considering Kubica's lengthy spell away from F1, I think Palmer is more likely to pick up points this season. However, I think it would put Renault in a better position for next season to give Kubica some race experience this season. Of course, if the opportunity to sign Fernando Alonso presents itself, this argument would be void. To that end, I think Renault should hold off on the switch until Alonso's plans for next season are fairly clear. It's quite a nice little love triangle, this, isn't it? Thank you very much for your message, Maxwell. Steve?
Yeah, interesting, really. I hadn't overly really considered much about sort of Alonso, possibility of him maybe going back to Renault, but I don't know, would they really want to take him? I mean, I think he'll be 37 in the latter part of next season. I think if they're now building towards the future and trying to pick up better staff, more staff, pumping more money in, would they be looking more to the future now? I can't see it.
We'll get on to predictions over the course of these three podcasts, and I'm sure Fernando will come up. What do you think we'll learn about Fernando in the second half of the season, say for next year?
I think it wouldn't surprise me if he decided to retire or take it maybe a year off with a view to coming back if the opportunity arises. But you know what I'd put my money on prediction was? He's driving at McLaren next year.
Oof. I really would.
I don't know why. I just got that feeling.
Personally, because Fernando says he wants to be in a winning car next year, I personally can't see the Renault being in a position next year. I mean, they could, if you want to be really out there, you could say maybe they'd be in with a shout if they've got the staff and the resources to do it. But personally, I can't see it happening.
It's only three winning cars at the moment anyway, aren't they, Callum?
Yeah, I think either Alonso plays somewhat the longer game and hope that he can still stay on the top of his game until he's sort of 38, 39, which I would say the smart money on it is probably on McLaren in the long run, so the next 3 or 4 years. Surely Honda are going to come good at some point, and McLaren have all the staff on their side. You know, people like Peter Prodromou, Neil Oatley have both designed race-winning cars. So I wouldn't say there's any reason to say they won't be successful. It's just a case of when are they going to get that success? But yeah, I can't really see him going to Renault either. As far as I'm concerned, I think he probably is just going to be a McLaren driver next year.
I'm sure we'll touch on Renault a bit more over the course of the next few podcasts. Right then, let's just wrap this up finally. Callum, you're looking after the Twitter feed at the moment. Enjoying it?
Yeah, I suppose.
Doing a stellar job. So get involved on the Twitter feed. Message Callum and he'll ping back. You might get me as well. I loiter around there sometimes. The Twitter feed is @thenrf1. That's the handle, of course. twitter.com/thenrf1. Dan, you touched on how well the season's going. How many races are left?
There are 4 more races to go. 2 at Brands Hatch on a Grand Prix circuit, and then 2 at Alton Park and at the end of October. so it's probably going to rain.
Come on, Jacopo. That's all we've got to say. Any other business? Callum, you had some any other business?
Yeah, it's the Suzuka 1,000 kilometres this weekend, Super GT round. Obviously, me being incredibly biased.
Just spit it out.
Yep, Jensen Button's involved. not really holding out hope because one of his teammates is Daisuke Nakajima. He's terrible. He's like Kazuki, but worse. So yeah, it's, I think, 6:30 race start on Nismo TV on YouTube.
Good knowledge. Do you want to predict where he's going to finish?
Not on the podium. Okay. Probably, I don't know, top 10.
Well, if he finishes.
If he finishes.
Well, we might drive into someone again.
Is there any Honda involvement in his car?
Yeah, he's driving a Honda NSX.
Is this a good Honda?
I have no idea. I've never watched Super GT in my life.
Fantastic. Are they all Hondas?
I think it's Honda, then... It's
Honda, Nissan and Lexus.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed, go Jensen. The NRF1 is officially bending its knee to Jensen. We wish you well in Japan. I think I gave you some of the social media channels, didn't I? At the NRF1 is the handle for Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, so I'm sure you'll be able to find us. And we've got a YouTube channel as well, nrf1.uk/nrf1tube. We've got a cracking video on there from our time spent at the British Grand Prix, the last time we went karting as well, 4 or 5 years ago. Some great videos, so check those out. And if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email. We love reading them, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. Right, we wrap this one up then. It's goodbye from our guests, from Steve.
Cheerio.
From Dan.
Goodbye.
From Callum.
Goodbye.
Thanks to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up at gpro.net/nrf1. It's goodbye from me. This has been the NRF1 podcast. Time for a spa next. And if it's relaxing, we're doing it wrong. We'll be back damn soon with our Belgium Grand Prix preview. Until then, goodbye.